call a special common council meeting for January 11th, 2016 to order. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson?
Here.
Alderman Dambia?
Here.
Alderman Mayer?
Here.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Here.
Alderman Taylor?
Here.
Alderman Schmidt?
Here.
Alderwoman Mayer?
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise and join in the Pledge of Allegiance flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, and welcome to everyone that's here. This is a good turnout. I appreciate that. I know the applicant appreciates it as well. Just want to go over a couple of ground rules before we get started, if I might. This is a concept review, and it's a concept review before the Common Council's practice that was started several years ago at the request of developers so that they could get feedback from the Common Council before they invested tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars in their development plans. It's not a part of the statutory requirements by the City of Franklin. It's not in our Unified Development Ordinance or any other ordinance in the city. It is purely a volunteer activity on the part of the applicant before the Common Council. Comments made here at a concept review meeting are in no way binding in any way upon any actions for the city. So there is also, in a true world, no prejudgment of the proposal by the Common Council in either way. So I want you to keep that in mind. And tonight there will be no action regarding this item. This is the beginning of a long process. Mr. Zimmerman was looking at me like, yeah, it's too long. But all developers say that. But it's a long process. There will be multiple public hearings depending on what action needs to be taken by the Common Council and the Plan Commission. We're going to, without objection from the Common Council, hold citizen comment period to the end. Seeing no objection, we'll do that. I'll make another introduction as we go into citizens comment period, but we're going to ask that everyone hold their comments to 3 minutes, 3 minutes only. And we're going to have you, since there is a crowd here, one time through before you get a second shot. We always require that in these kind of meetings, we treat each other with respect. And by each other, I mean applicant, you folks as the audience, and the people sitting next to you. Your opinion is valuable, but so is the person sitting next to you. So let's be respectful to everyone in the room as we do this. So having said that, Mr. Deagle. I'm sorry, Mr. Hertzberg.
Sure. In my role as the Economic Development Director, I work to attract and help draw development to this area. And in preparation for tonight's meeting, I've been coordinating activities with Mr. Zimmerman and his development team. As we learn more about this project, I'll utilize my expertise in data collection and analysis tools to provide input into the city's decision-making process. We'll be looking at quantitative and qualitative analysis of the Franklin market, review of census, American Community Survey data, and information from our retail analytic partner, Buxton. We'll be doing due diligence analysis of each aspect of the project, researching comparable developments and impacts, researching prior developments by members of the development team, evaluating economic development impacts, including value per acre and associated opportunity costs. And when possible, we'll be working to triangulate sources of data between hard data, national trends, and what's actively going on in the regional market. And in addition to the analytics, it's going to be important to consider how the project fits into the broader vision for the city of Franklin. The area around 76 in Rawson has long been considered capable of attracting additional development and already has master planning efforts underway. We call this Redevelopment Area A. This proposal, therefore, should be considered in relation to those ongoing planning efforts. With any proposal, we're reminded that the city of Franklin is a community with great development potential, and I look forward to hearing from the development team and the residents this evening as we start consideration of the project.
Okay, before we go to Mr. Deal, thank you, Mr. Hertzberg. I do want to recognize that there is a representative from the county here, This is Jim Tarantino. He is the Director of Economic Development. He's with us. And I expect shortly to see the Director of Parks, John Darville Jr., will be here. County Supervisor Tony Staskunas sends his regrets. He had a prior commitment to this evening. Greendale Village President Jim Birmingham. So,
could they stand or wave?
Jim Tarantino? Thank you, Jim. President Birmingham, if you would, please. And that's it.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to provide a little bit of background and a little bit of information about what might happen during this process as well. But first, a little bit of background. As most people probably here probably know, this will involve both property associated with the Rock, which is north of Rawson Avenue, as well as somewhere south of the Rock. The Rock is currently zoned for a planned development district for the Rock Sports Complex. When that was approved a couple years ago, that was identifying future uses as well as what's already been developed. One of those future uses was a stadium, baseball stadium. That stadium was would require and does require a special use. About a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, Mr. Zimmerman brought forward that proposal for a stadium. Eventually, after a long review process, the Common Council did approve that special use with a number of conditions, but it was approved. However, at the same time, Mr. Zimmerman was also talking to the city about obtaining some financial assistance. That part of the approval was not approved, and ultimately the project was never developed. Almost all of our approvals have a time limit for that special use. It was a year. So even though it was approved, that time limit has expired. So even if it was just the baseball stadium again, they would have to start the process all over. And it's important to point out, as a special use, it does require a public hearing that is held at the Plan Commission, and then the information from the Plan Commission, the public hearing, and the applicant is all presented to the Common Council for their decision. That's for the baseball stadium. Now the applicant is asking or proposing a much larger development, including that baseball stadium, an indoor facility adjacent to that baseball stadium, and some adjacent commercial and retail development, some of which is on the Rock property, some of which might be on some currently owned DOT land, some of which might even be on the south part, south of Rawson, immediately adjacent to Rawson on the lands to the south. But primarily that land to the south would be proposed for apartments. Again, that's a little bit of the background. The land to the south is zoned single-family residential. So if the applicant and who's the property owner would want to develop apartments there, they would have to rezone that property. A rezone also requires a public hearing, also in front of the Plan Commission. And just like that special use, that information from the public hearing, from the public, from the Plan Commission, and the applicant, all goes to the Common Council, and then they make the final decision. Staff has looked at these preliminary materials that the applicant is going to present tonight. There's a number of options that the applicant or the city could take to address or to accommodate this development, including rezonings, as I mentioned. They could amend the current planned development district for the Rock for that portion that's north of Rawson to accommodate those changes proposed there. That would also require a public hearing. These things could take place in steps or stages, or many of these could occur at the same time. But each one of those would still have its own public hearing. So even if the applicant wishes to proceed all at once with everything, every special use would have its own public hearing. Every planned development district change would have its own public hearing, and every rezoning would have a public hearing. And ultimately, as I mentioned before, it's up to the applicant to propose whatever they would like to see, hopefully taking into account comments from the neighborhood. They present that to the Plan Commission and staff. There will be public hearings. All these meetings are open to the public. And then that information ultimately goes before the Common Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, thanks, Joel. Can you guys hear me okay? Can everybody hear me back there? I first off want to start by thanking the Common Council for rescheduling. I said we were, I think, originally scheduled to do this back in October. So I appreciate you rescheduling it for now. The reason we, as you know, the reason why we needed to reschedule it is because I had a meeting with our nearby neighbors in Stonehenge and Hawthorne, and it was pretty clear to me that we needed to spend more time listening to those folks, talking about certain elements of the proposal. So what we did is we engaged Mary Claire Lancer to essentially go door-to-door, and she provided sort of our listening. She was our listening channel. She also put together a nice little report that I'll talk about here in a bit. But that was really important for us to kind of think about what we want to do, when we want to do it, what changes we're contemplating. So today's presentation is really structured with that in mind. So I've got a really terrific panel of speakers here to talk about a lot of different things, but it's really designed to kind of react to some of the comments that we heard through that door-to-door campaign. So in terms of today, we're going to present a concept for you guys called Ballpark Commons, which you heard about. And as Joel said, this is not necessarily a new proposal, but it's vastly improved since its inception 2 years ago. And what I can say is it's got a lot of everything in it. You know, it's love, it's dislike, it's, you know, misunderstood. And, you know, unfortunately, I'd say it's still very unknown amongst Franklin residents. And while it's got its opposition, I would also suggest that, you know, it's got the support, at least from the channels that we're poked into, it's got the support of the majority of Franklin residents. That doesn't mean it's perfect, doesn't mean that there's not a lot of work still to be done, but it seemingly has a lot of support behind it as well. So Joel, like you did, in terms of kind of looking back at history, I was preparing for today's presentation, and I went back and essentially looked at all of the different articles, because as everybody knows, this is a pretty well-documented project. So I want to walk everybody through that, because I think it adds sort of interesting context to where we are today. So as a reminder, back in 2013, I submitted a proposal to, at the time, the then-current mayor, Taylor, and the then-current alderman. And the proposal was essentially a city finance stadium with the hope that development would be right around the corner. And then a month later, that same common council rejected, but they gave me a counteroffer. And I completely forgot about this point, but there's an article out there that talks about this. And the counteroffer was, if you could commit to the development, and at the time it was $40 million, we would be interested in evaluating that. So my reaction at the time was I needed to do some self-reflection. I ultimately came back, did some self-reflection, and committed to the $40 million worth of development. And did that as evidenced in the MOU that I negotiated with the city staff at that period of time. So we then negotiated the MOU, and then in March 2014, it received unanimous support from the then task force that ultimately proposed to the Common Council at the time to move forward with the MOU. And then in April 2014, the Common Council went into closed session and voted down proposal 6-0, citing multiple unknowns. And there's a couple articles out there that talk about what those unknowns are. Specifically, they are no firm commitments from developers, lack of land ownership, and then lack of county support. However, as Joel said, the county did approve the use of the stadium. So, you know, I share this again as, you know, a means to remind everybody about all the work that's been done. So a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about, we've talked about DNR issues. I'm not saying we shouldn't revisit them, but I think there's a really interesting body of work that can be leveraged as we you know, reevaluate this. But the other thing in terms of the unknowns, I'd say, you know, it was really tough time for me to go through that. When you guys said no, I'd say I'm kind of glad you did it, because today's proposal, the concept that we've got today, is pretty strong, and I've worked through a lot of those unknowns. So, and I'll walk you through what those are. I mean, the first is Oak Creek. We spent about a year trying to get to a deal with Oak Creek, and there's a misconception out there that Oak Creek said no to the proposal, and it's simply not true. Oak Creek wanted to do the deal. They said yes. As a matter of fact, they signed a memo of understanding with us, and it was based on us securing a piece of property off of Highway 94 between Drexel and Rawson if we could win the land, which was at the time in receivership. So long story short, we were unable to. We lost the land to Continental, and I sat back and kind of reevaluated everything. But there were things then going on in this city of Franklin that reignited my interest, because what people always ask me is, why are you making another run at this? And I would say simply because I think I've evolved, but I think the city's evolved too, as signaled through the three studies that you guys are doing, which I think signals to developers that you want to be a competitive city. So you've got these three TIF studies going on in a number of areas, and as Aaron said, this is Area A. There's a number of surveys out there that talk about how hungry, no pun intended, but how hungry the city of Franklin is for retail and restaurants. And then lastly, the recruitment of the economic development director. Sort of long time coming, and Aaron, welcome. But all those, to me, I think, were signs. So again, I share this with you because I think it becomes a foundational element to the narrative, our narrative. When I say our narrative, I'm talking about the developer's narrative, but also the city's narrative in terms of where we're at today. So now what I want to do is I want to just give you an executive summary of Ballpark Commons. So I wrote this, and I want to kind of go one by one. It took me a bit to write this, but I think it's a pretty good summary of what we're trying to do. So carrying forward the vision of Franklin residents, we're proposing a sports anchor development called Ballpark Commons. By leveraging the success of The Rock and building a stadium and indoor training and tournament center, the collective sports venues will become a catalyst for creating a sustainable, walkable, bikeable, connected mixed-use neighborhood and sports destination, which is very attractive to top talent and employers, millennials, and an aging population that can all live, work, and play in a fully integrated community. All told, we estimate somewhere between $100 and $130 million worth of development in phase one of Area A. And we think that this is just the start of Area A. But perhaps more compelling is the sense of community and civic pride that will be derived by a development like this. These sorts of places, the ones that are rich in social networks, are becoming how cities compete for the future. This is not a Me Too development. We're not trying to be Drexel Town Square, Milwaukee, or Waukesha suburban projects. It is designed to be smaller, more connected, and most importantly, completely unique. It's a spectacular opportunity for Franklin to promote itself as a community capable of accomplishing a wide range of development, from subdivisions to forward-thinking mixed-use projects that can be safely labeled smart growth. Ballpark Commons can be seen as a true placemaking project, mixing home, work, recreation, and entertainment in the way real communities used to develop, before subsidized far-flung suburbs became the norm. For the city of Franklin, this development presents an incredible opportunity to promote itself as the suburb that has the best of both worlds. You can live in a cul-de-sac in a classic subdivision, or choose to live in an apartment that is close to restaurants, entertainment, and groceries. There are a few opportunities in Franklin for the sorts of chance encounters that lead to friendships and collaborations. Mixed-use developments designed and programmed with networking top of mind is an opportunity to live and work in a setting much more attractive to millennials and empty nesters who want to age in place. It's more important to note that this project is not, it's also important to note this project is not possible unless we come together in a public-private partnership. Lastly, we plan on being inclusive with our immediate neighbors and Franklin residents as a whole to continue to design and program Ballpark Commons. So I want to walk you through what the results of Mary Claire's study was. But before I do that, I just totally neglected to talk about a couple other elements that weren't in the proposal before. One of the things that you guys cited was no firm commitments. So as soon as we put together the one of the last renditions, we received four pretty firm commitments from developers that wanted to come into your city and develop. We worked through that selection process. We picked Blair Williams from Wired. He's going to come up and talk about the mixed use in the apartments, but we picked him as our partner to go forward, assuming you guys want to go forward. So in terms of firm commitments, we've got land acquisitions. We didn't have the land under our control before. Today we do. We own the Peridonovich Farm. We also picked up the DOT land that is in our plan. UWM is here to talk as well. They were not part of the plan before. They have we have a letter of intent with those guys to come play baseball here. So they're an important anchor. And I'll let the coach talk about why their program needs this type of place to play in. You also cited lack of county involvement. As the mayor said, the county's here. We've had multiple meetings just about a month ago or maybe less. We met with the mayor, the county executive, a lot of county executives. And I would say, and I think it's fair to say, that county is very much supportive of what we're doing. The devil's always in the detail, but they're very supportive, and I would suggest that they're sitting waiting to get to yes, realizing that we still have to put together a meaty proposal in front of them. So they're supportive from what I can tell. And then lastly, you know, the thing that we didn't have before is we were sort of an unproven operator. Before I, you know, I just purchased the Wave. I think actually I purchased the Wave after that. But I wanted to sink my teeth into operating support teams. Now I'm happy to report that we've got three successful sports teams that we run. And, you know, the example that another presenter is going to talk about is Kokomo, Indiana. And, you know, that's significant really at three different levels. Number one, because it proves that we can operate successfully, which is, I think, part of the concern is will we be here forever? Well, in terms of Kokomo, we were number one in our league in terms of financial performance. We also were in the top quartile in terms of being a performer that operates baseball teams. This idea that the stadium could be a catalyst for economic development, Kokomo was a little different. They took a huge leap of faith. They invested $10.5 million with the hope that it would come, and that was a year ago. And 2 months ago, what they reported as part of their revitalization project was a recent announcement of $32 million of mixed-use development that is quoted as this would have not happened if the stadium wasn't there, meaning the developer said if the stadium wasn't built, we wouldn't be doing this. And then lastly, again, Josh is going to talk about it, but this baseball project galvanized this community in a really interesting way, and we're going to talk about that later. So, again, I say that because, you know, it's a much more evolved proposal. I think, you know, over the last 2 years, we're all better for it, but now we come to the table with a pretty sophisticated proposal. So now let's talk about the findings of, I'm going to call this the Mary Claire Report, if you don't mind. So the work that was done door-to-door, and this will take about 5 minutes, but I think it's important to the dialogue here. It was done for about 45 days. These subdivisions that we canvassed were Hawthorne, Stonehenge, and Woodland Terrace. We knocked down 188 doors. And when I say we, I mean Mary Claire. Of the 188, we spoke to 131 people. And those conversations were less than a minute, up to 90 minutes each. We also visited with businesses along the Rawson and 76 corridor, specifically 48 businesses, mostly managers and business owners. We also contacted numerous residents and business owners that were recommended by other contacts. So the summary of that feedback was that adjacent homeowners were our top priority. Now we started with the closest properties on Hawthorne and Stonehenge. Nearly everyone appreciated the personal outreach. The closer people live to the proposed development, the more likely they are to be opposed. People are neutral or supportive. They don't want their neighbors to know. Nearly all businesses closest to Rawson and 76th Street strongly support the sports complex expansion because of increased vitality it would bring to this trade area. Some mentioned that more rooftops would increase their customer base. In terms of Hawthorne, no homes predate landfill operations, and the closest homes that were built in the 1970s. And their top concern was methane management. There are two reported methane incidents that occurred in the 1990s. We told residents that the DNR has ultimate approval authority and that if the DNR denies its application, the sports complex cannot be expanded. Their second concern was water quality. All homes have private wells of varying depths. Closest homes have their water tested for chemicals twice per year. No one we met with reported positive findings for identified chemicals. But there is concern, however, that ground disturbance will decrease water quality and quantity. Their third concern was property values. In terms of the other side, or South Rawson, there is not much opposition to the proposed development south of Rawson as to the sports complex expansion proposed north of Rawson. When asked for suggestions for additional development at the Rock, the primary response was none, ever. Stonehenge. Homeowners built with the understanding that the proposed multifamily mixed-use site would be developed as R3, executive single-family lots like their own. Their top concern was decreased property values. Residents believe that apartments will decrease their values, especially for those homes adjacent to the site proposed for rezoning. Their second concern was safety, given perceived caliber of renters at any rental price point and demographic. There were many themes, but mostly many will be interested in a lot of the detail about architecture, materials, landscaping, renderings. Some mentioned decreasing our density. There was not as much opposition, however. In fact, some outright support the proposed expansion to the sports complex. Most liked the horse farm, some of the adjacent did not. Thematically, for both neighborhoods, there is concern around lights and noise. Residents are skeptical that current levels indeed meet city ordinances. There also is concern of traffic. I believe Rawson is already in poor repair, and there are questions about how increased traffic will affect those residents. Roadway design capacity, roadway jurisdiction, approval of access points, and traffic impact analysis were all described as topics of required subsequent approvals. They also were concerned and had doubts about viability of the minor league baseball. A major theme was that many neighbors used and liked the Rock and appreciate that Mike is a pro-Franklin resident and business owner. There's concern about the requested financial participation. There is a theme of sympathy with residents who live closer, including Greendale residents, who are affected by lights and noise. There's another theme of Franklin that should establish and promote their vision for development instead of missing opportunities. Another concern is the distrust of regulating agencies, politicians, and the applicant. Much misunderstanding about TIF, even about what a pilot is. There are questions about who owned county-owned land. Several asked that if the Rock expansion could occur without financial participation by the city. Others asked if expansion at the Rock could occur without the development. In terms of businesses, vacant storefronts, properties are in need of repair, and struggling businesses may take some of the shopping centers appear less than vibrant. Nearby residents identify retail and dining destinations in other communities such as Oak Creek and Brookfield instead of patronizing local businesses. There is unanimous support, except for four, I guess it's not unanimous, two opposed. One, it's also important to note, one of these business owners also lives in Stonehenge, but would not tell us why they were opposed. One skeptic and is still studying, and one opposed to just the apartment component. Support for a special information meeting about our plans for business owners who are making decisions about their leases was fully supported. And then nearly all businesses owners expressed frustration with customer and sales numbers and strongly endorse the plan. So that's the report out on the neighbors, and we think that that's relevant both in terms of how we customized our presentation, but also as you guys think about our proposal. So without further ado, I'm going to hand the presentation over to Mick Hatch. And Mick Hatch, I don't know if you know him, but I met Mick, six, 7 months ago. I was doing a transaction with Foley & Lardner, and he was introduced as kind of the guru in this region. And if you look at his background and start to talk to this guy, there's probably nobody better around in terms of real estate. He's probably the most prolific real estate attorney out here. So I told him I wasn't going to read his bio because it's just too long. He's like billions of dollars worth of work. Has helped me recruit this team, has helped me think about the plan. So I'm going to let him do his story, if that's okay, and introduce the team.
Thanks, Mike. I'll be brief. As Mike said, I only met him 6-7 months ago, and as we started to talk about the potential that this project had, I realized that in the 40-plus years that I've been working on billions of dollars in real estate projects in Wisconsin, this one was going to be really special, not because it's so large, but because of the impact it could have on this community. It could create a city center for Franklin where one really doesn't exist now. It could vitalize Franklin in some pretty interesting ways that distinguish it from every other community in this part of the state. It could bring restaurants, retail, recreation, entertainment, some really interesting uses to the center of your community that would really change it. So we sat down and pulled together a development team, a team I'd like to think of as sort of an all-star team to plan this development that you hear more about tonight. The team, as you see on the side behind me, consists at its top of Mike and Greg Marshall, both of whom you probably know, both of whom are lifelong residents of Franklin. Sort of leading our day-to-day efforts is Dick Lincoln. I've worked with Dick for decades. Dick has developed millions of square feet of really exciting buildings, and I thought a year or so ago I'd lose the chance to work with him again as he retired from Mandel Group. As it turned out, this project was so exciting, it brought him out of retirement, and he's been running it for the last 6 or 7 months. For master planning, we went to the Dean of Urban Planning in Wisconsin, Brian Vanderwall in Madison. Brian can't be here tonight, he has the flu, but he has a specialty in market-driven design, which he brought to this project, and you'll see his work later on. from a legal perspective, besides my own work, my partner, Bruce Keyes, has been part of this project. I've worked with Bruce since the late 90s when we created Menominee Valley Partners. Back then, the Menominee Valley was the biggest brownfield in Wisconsin. It's now a national success story of redevelopment. Bruce worked and continues to work heavily on that and lots of other environmentally challenged development projects and can bring a lot of expertise to the issues faced here. Our sports attorney and advisor, Josh, is sort of Mr. Baseball. He's way more than a sports attorney. He's worn about every baseball hat anyone could imagine. He's been a CEO of a team. He's been a professional scout. He's taught sports law in a law school. And he's provided lots and lots of advice, and you'll hear from him later, his expertise in this area. For community outreach, you've already heard about Mary Claire Lancer. She's been a really important part of this process, particularly over the last several months, as she's helped us understand and address the issues that the neighbors have raised about this project. For media, we've relied on Miller Communications. They've done a good job and will continue to do a good job helping us explain this project to everyone in ways that they will understand it. And last but not least is Blair Williams, who Mike introduced briefly. I had the pleasure of working with Blair from time to time over the years, and I've really enjoyed the business he's built in the last 10 years and the special niche that he's bringing to Franklin. He, I think, is the consummate developer of neighborhood, retail, mixed-use developments. You'll see and learn about some of them, but I think that's a key piece to making the city center concept of this project work for Franklin, and you'll be interested to hear him. So without spending any more time talking about us, let me have Dick walk you through the concept. Dick?
Thank you, Mick. So we've talked about a couple of these things, but as you know, we feel we're presenting a really exciting concept to create this sports anchored village. And
is this here in the back of the room?
No. Pull it a little further. Is that better? Okay. And we have the opportunity to create something that's really special. And vitally important to the city of Franklin. We'll be providing sports venues to draw visitors from throughout the Midwest, and this really is a regional draw. We'll provide Franklin residents with new and much-needed dining and shopping and leisure options, and provide new forms of housing for existing and for future residents of Franklin. What we have is really an opportunity to focus on what makes Franklin different and special and to build on that. It's important to note that each component of this overall development draws on and supports the other components, but we need them, and as Mike kind of alluded in his opening remarks, we really need all of the components in order for the development to be viable. Going back to something that the mayor mentioned, this really is a concept. The details will change, they'll be filled in as the development moves forward. But the mix and the general location, we think, would pretty much remain the same. And touching on what Joel mentioned, this is really the first step in a very long process that will involve rezoning, probably a comprehensive plan amendment, specific site plan and building approvals, as well as final resolution of the environmental issues. And there will be ample opportunity for input at every step of the way, and we welcome that opportunity. Mike talked about the canvassing that Mary Claire did in the adjacent neighborhoods, and we recognize for sure the legitimate concerns, especially among those residential neighborhoods. But we also believe that there are equally legitimate responses to each of those concerns. And that's really what we're about tonight. The development team and our other experts here will try to respond to those issues. We don't have all the answers yet. We're not asking for a specific approval of anything tonight. Instead, we're asking for the city's reaction and feedback and for the opportunity to move forward with city staff and city's consultants. So
I apologize. I'm going to turn my back on the audience just a little bit so I can use the laser here. But this is the overall site plan, and it really breaks down almost into two separate projects. The areas to the north, which include the stadium and the sports complex, is one piece of it, and then the triangle to the south contains the mixed use and the multifamily. So this we're gonna talk first about the sports village areas north of Rawson. The anchor is the stadium, which will be approximately accommodate about 4,000 spectators, 2,500 on hard seats and another 1,500 on lawn seats. It'll be home to a minor league professional baseball team, as well as the UWM Panthers baseball team. And potentially in the future, a PDL professional soccer, as well as local and regional sport teams. The second key component is this Four Seasons sports complex that will contain four Little League-sized fields, along with restaurants and retail spaces that will relate to those areas. Could also be designed to accommodate soccer and lacrosse in the future. And we would have an 80 to 100 foot wide landscaped area adjacent to the Hawthorne residential neighborhood. There's also the possibility for a couple of hotels and several restaurant or retail pads. And one last thing I want to mention, you see this kind of red dotted line. One of the things we'll be able to accomplish is the extension of the Oak Leaf Trail. The extension of the Oak Leaf Trail through this entire property. The county has received a grant which will enable them to build a new bridge across the Menominee River, and so we'll be able to extend that Oak Leaf Trail as well, all part of the kind of connectivity message. As Mick mentioned, Brian VanDeWall called us this afternoon and is ill. But Mike is going to talk a little bit about the sort of the sports village concept.
Okay. So what you guys see here is an indoor, you know, refer to it as the four-season indoor sports complex. And I would say that this particular design is inspired by a group out of Davenport that's putting something together very similar. But it also has really good heritage in the research work that I did when I was looking to recruit the Bo Jackson folks, if anybody remembers that. So, but to really, I guess, understand that opportunity, it probably makes sense to understand, you know, what the Rock does, you know, for the summer, spring, and fall months. And simply put, the Rock is, we're sold out, and the tournament venues that we've got are pretty significant in terms of the visitor counts that we've got. This year, in 2016, we're going to be doing roughly 23 tournaments. And when you look at what that will do from a visitor standpoint, it'll bring about 150,000, we estimate about 150,000 people to the area. Now, what's interesting about this upcoming season is the bulk of those folks are out-of-towners, which drives some pretty interesting demand both from a hotel standpoint and a retail standpoint as well. So understanding that, then if you look at, you know, how we compete with other outdoor complexes, we're unique, but there's a lot more of those than there are of these. And there's this huge demand for a very similar business model in the winter months. So what this represents is a variation of that. And not only will it be, you know, on weekends a tournament venue for baseball, it will also be a training center for the Wave. It'll be a training center for elite athletes. We've got a business we work with called Prospect Training Academy, which deals with elite athletes to try to get them college scholarships. So we feel pretty confident about the programming opportunity on the indoor venue. And this visual, and I'll let Dick maybe sort of page through the visuals, but it's butted up against when Davenport did this particular study. and Vandenwald's so much better than I am at presenting this, but when Vandenwald did this study, they actually go back one, Dick, if you don't mind. They said that a lot of people want to be part of it. And as a matter of fact, this complex fueled, I believe it was three hotels. There was enough need and capacity for three different hotels, as well as a front retail component. And in their example, in the Davenport example, it was a Dick's Sporting Goods, a restaurant, and then a kind of a wave attraction. So we think the same thing is very possible. But what's interesting is, again, we'll talk about it later, but it creates kind of this main and main concept. So I think, Dick, you've got other shots, right, of the indoor. So this is a visual of the indoor. And what it does, again, it kind of creates a neat place. If anybody's been over to U-Line or Brookfield Indoor, this is a nicer version of that, but very similar concept where you can, you know, take the family, come out, grab a hot dog, watch either your kids practicing, training, or, you know, if it's tournament play. And by the way, the U-Line and Brookfield Indoor is just, I think, another great example of the market demand, because both of those are almost at sellout capacity as well. So, Dick, do we have another visual?
Yep.
So that's the indoor piece, Dick.
Next, I'm going to introduce Josh Schaub.
I could hear myself. Next, I want to introduce Josh Schaub, who's, as Mick mentioned, is an experienced attorney and a sports veteran. And he's the owner and CEO of the Lyle Baseball Partners, which is an expansion prospecting team in Lyle, Illinois, that's scheduled to debut this year. He's a partner in the Weber Law Group in Minneapolis, and he also serves as an associate scout for the Milwaukee Brewers, as well as an advisor to our group. So, Josh.
Thank you, Dick. Thank you to council, thank you to the neighbors and followers of this development. We appreciate your time in coming here today. Some of you may recognize me. I was before council at the previous session where Mike presented the stadium concept. Much like then, as now, I believe in this concept that it's viable for minor league baseball. Not only is it viable, but it would be a tremendous success going forward. And that's based not only on my own experience, but also looking at the statistical data and comparables, which I'm going to talk about a little bit in my presentation here. So in this first slide, we're going to discuss what we're discussing, minor league baseball, what that entails, some of the other uses that have already been mentioned for the stadium, and then also I'm going to add a little depth into what the youth tournaments really bring, and the stadium component is actually a big part of the youth tournaments, driving those youth tournaments and really expanding the geographic scope of where those teams come from. So I'll start out, and I promise to be brief. This is a topic that I get excited about. I'll do my best to keep it limited. Minor league baseball, what does that equation really look like? There's two components. You have affiliated minor league baseball, and you have independent league minor league baseball. Affiliated baseball obviously means teams that are affiliated with major league teams. Major league teams own the contracts of the players that are in affiliated baseball. Independent league baseball are players that were either passed over in the major league draft, so they're undrafted free agents signed to independent league teams, or they are players that have come from affiliated baseball that were released for some reason, whether it be injury, performance, or most likely a major league team has determined along the way that they are not big leaguers, which doesn't mean they're not professional baseball players. In fact, a lot of them are great professional baseball players. In fact, I think the gentleman behind me about to speak was an undrafted free agent, made it to AAA. So what independent league baseball is in terms of a product and where it came from was in 1993, Major League Baseball capped the number of minor league teams at 160. And in 1993, what that meant is you had a suppressed labor market for baseball players, which spilled out 700 players a year that are still professional baseball players and had the ability to play professionally but needed someplace to play. The other aspect of affiliated baseball you should know about is territorial restrictions. Many people, I think, when we discuss this development, ask, why can't you be affiliated? The reason is, much like many franchises in America, affiliated baseball has territory restrictions. And in this particular market, you have the Milwaukee Brewers right up the road who own this territory. They then have the right to determine whether another affiliated team could come into this market. going a little further down that rabbit hole, if the Milwaukee Brewers said, we are okay with having an affiliated team here, that means you have to purchase an affiliated team and move it here since you cannot have expansion because of the cap of 160. The hurdle of that is your only geographic territory in terms of league you're in is the Midwest League, of which no teams are for sale right now. So we then land on the independent league route. And I'll go into a little bit about independent league baseball at this point. Speaking specifically to geographic leagues that we could potentially fit in here, you fall into three: the Atlantic League, the American Association, and the Frontier League. Each of those leagues has a little different level of talent in each, with the Frontier League having A to high A players typically, American Association A ball to double A, Atlantic League is double A and triple A, primarily located on the East Coast, but somehow ventures down in the South in Texas. Geographically speaking and talent-wise, the American Association fits the 4,000-seat stadium that we are proposing here today. Some people have questioned independent leagues and the talent level, and I can speak briefly on these players and give you some confidence and solace in their abilities. If the argument is players in independent leagues don't make it as often to the big leagues as affiliated teams, that's true. I can't argue that, and the simple reason is big league teams keep funneling those players through their system to the big leagues. However, if the argument is the Midwest League is better than the American Association, I have to say that's patently false. For the reason that independent league players in the American Association have already played in the A-ball system, they've already played in the high A system, the rookie level system, and most likely in the double A system. And they've succeeded at those levels to some level of degree to have moved on. So therefore, the only conclusion is if they were released in their 23, 24, and 25-year-old season, they then have been released by a big league team. They actually haven't even hit their prime yet. So players are actually still improving when they get to the American Association, which is what we are proposing for Franklin and the surrounding communities. So we've discussed league opportunities and where we've landed. American Association is our chosen league. Other tenants, UW-Milwaukee, who you're going to hear from briefly, will be the sole Division I state baseball team. They would be housed in this stadium, and a tremendous honor for Franklin to really put a regional stamp that you are the home of the only Division I baseball team. PDL Soccer would also be housed here. Premier collegiate players in the country spend their summers on PDL teams. This